Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast about a life following Watford Football Club, brought to you by The Athletic. It is Sunday and Watford lost to Man City yesterday. We've been here before, but it wasn't as bad as one time before, was it, Mike? Well, our podcast post the 8-0 was terrible, wasn't it?
Yes, I didn't enjoy that. And I haven't enjoyed many games against Manchester City, actually, in the past couple of years. But we got out unscathed, didn't we? And we're still smiling just.
Jason's here also. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening.
Because, you know, boys, we are at the end of, we've made it through the nightmare run of games, which we, Mike, yourself and I, and Kelly Sommers, we had a chat about the coming season. And this was just sitting there the whole season, like, yeah, with big flashing red lights and, you know, poking sticks ready for us. And it was, it felt like it was going to be, or it could be, the thing that was going to destroy us. And if we made any sort of great start to the season, which we didn't, it could be the thing that ruins our rest, yeah, of the season. But we are in a very weird place. Now, are you looking at this as one win and four defeats? Or, like myself, where actually what happened was we drew against Manchester United, Arsenal and Leicester City, and we've only lost two games against Chelsea and Man City. And we're only minus two in the goal difference after all those games.
If you'd offered us three draws from that group of five games, we'd have absolutely bitten your hand off. And in terms of points, that's effectively what we've got. But I think potentially we've got something even more valuable than that. And that might sound a little bit weird. Obviously, more points wouldn't have gone amiss. But we've got an identity, we've got a bit of belief. And we, I think, as supporters, what we've got is an indication that these players aren't just going to roll over. They're not going to lie down. They believe in what they're trying to achieve under Claudio Ranieri. They believe in each other. They believe in the boss. And they believe in their ability. And I think for us to come out of this clutch of games, that's probably, for me, the most important thing. Because we're going to have a really, really tough time of it now. We've got the games that really count, if you like. The games where we really have to pick up points. And you mentioned that, John, going into this clutch of really difficult games, we fluffed our lines far, far too often. And what you want to have going into these big games that are coming up is confidence. And I think we've earned the right to go into them with confidence. Yes, more points would have been better for sure, but I think all things considered, I'm feeling probably better than I thought I would at this date when we look forward to the fixtures, and even the day before this little group of fixtures commenced. So yeah, can't say better than that, really.
No, a slightly happy Mike is an amazing achievement by everybody. Jason, what was your favourite defeat?
My favourite.
Was that a song by the Cardigans?
the favourite game, yes, 1998. Which was the best defeat, do you think? I mean, you might look at it in terms of the one that we got through the best, but maybe the one where we learnt the most about ourselves.
I don't know. I think the Chelsea one felt good, particularly as the opposition realised that they were lucky. In fact, they were Tuchel's exact words, weren't they? Thomas Tuchel's exact words were they were lucky to win. And I think we came out of that game with our heads held high. And I think you said, John, after the game, that actually quite annoyed you in the end. You weren't expecting to be annoyed by a defeat because we got so close. You end up being annoyed. So that's probably the one. The Arsenal one, we got annoyed for different reasons, didn't we? Which wasn't very palatable or enjoyable at all. So I'd probably say the Chelsea one.
Now, we are, though, after a defeat against Manchester City, as we've mentioned before, this is not a new place that we are going to be at. Jason, let's talk about that game in particular. Let's start with defence, because that's where the grumblings from the fans seem to have started. And it's always easy when you let goals in, that's where you're going to start your grumblings. But they were against Manchester City's attacking line.
Manchester City's attacking line, which compromises, I think, the majority of their players, bar Edison in goal, because they all get involved. And this isn't a Manchester City podcast, but we probably do need to doff our hats to the way they play. We've been, I'm not sure if lucky is the right word, but let's go with it anyway, lucky enough to see the European champions and the league champions at Vicarage Road in the last 5 days or whatever. But if you ask me, I think Man City look a class above Chelsea alone. Perhaps Watford as a team have the same fear factor that I do about Man City. They're just so, so good. And this season, they're playing without this sort of reliance on a striker, on any striker, it seems. We seem to struggle with that concept, defending against that concept as well. We're not the only ones. Other teams are coming up against them as well. Other teams, Palace beat them, but I think to beat City, you've got to be absolutely 100% perfect, and City have to have an off day. And we weren't 100% perfect last night. We were getting caught out by the quick tempo, the movement. Something with City that I've spotted this before when we've played them before. At times, they almost sort of line up in a sort of rectangle shape. They've got the boys sort of playing the ball, waiting for an opening, sort of along the back line. They've got their widest players are hogging the touchline sort of either side. They're making the pitch as wide as they possibly can. And then everyone else is sort of lined up alongside, sort of finding the gaps in our back line, ready to sort of spring any trap or any ball over the top or looking for the spaces in again to come and drop deep and pick the ball up. But it just looks really weird, this sort of rectangle, and you're sort of really not sure how to defend against it. Because they don't have these sort of focal point strikers, so to speak. Different players are trying to find the gaps in our defence, are then sort of making quick darts forward to make themselves available and to sort of look to get in behind. Our midfield defenders are sort of being pulled all over the place, and you could see that last night. I'm sure we'll talk about Danny Rose in a bit, but particularly our centre-back seemed to struggle against it. There were times in the first half you could see the gaps between Cathcart and Troost were way too big, and Gundogan and Grealish were sort of wandering into those holes whenever they sort of felt like it. And in the second half, I noticed there are a couple of times. One, Troost has been sort of pulled out of position by Gundogan. Massive gap there. He's like 5 metres ahead of where Kiko and Cathcart are. Cancelo spotted it straight away. He's then run into the gap. We're all out of sorts. And what's actually happened, it was right before the third goal. The goal hasn't come directly from Cancelo, but the ball's obviously then gone out to our left-hand side where most of our problems were. And then they've got the third goal. And then not long after that, again, Troost is sort of standing almost in line, not across the pitch, but in front of Cathcart, about 2 metres in front of him. He's realised Sterling has found the space where he should be. He sort of sprinted over to Sterling. And then as he sort of got his bearings as to where he is in line with the rest of his defenders, Sterling's then lost him, got in behind him, made the run. They've played the ball through. Luckily, Kiko was awake and he sort of come across and made the tackle. And you sort of, things like this that were going all the time. But it's sort of, yes, we know what our weaknesses are in defence, but you can see the strength of City's play means that it just made it so, so much harder.
It almost feels a little bit mealy-mouthed to talk about the mistakes that led to the City goals, because the reality is they could have been home and hosed after, 15, 20 minutes? They were absolutely all over us. And yeah, we found it very, very difficult defensively. But if you do look at the three goals, I think the first goal, where's the marking? Was anyone worried about Raheem Sterling after 3 or 4 minutes as well? We talk about how difficult it is to play against Manchester City when you have to stay switched on for the whole time. You have to be sort of hyper alert the whole time, whether you've got the ball or whether you haven't, just because of the damage they can do. But not to have someone picking up Raheem Sterling in that area after that amount of time was pretty ludicrous. I thought for the second goal, we missed an opportunity to get rid of the ball. Yes, it's a good, great finish. And yes, he sort of, you know, Bernardo Silva, top of his game, ghosts past them and slots it. But we need to make it harder. You look at the yellow shirts around him at the time. That, for me, wasn't really good enough. And again, a good finish from him for the third as well. But does Danny Rose do enough? I don't know. So it's now at the stage defensively where it's just absolutely undeniable that we're in a whole world of trouble, because we can't keep goals out. You know, that we've now, under since Claudio Ranieri joined, we've now conceded the most goals in the Premier League. It's 50 goals in the Premier League since our last clean sheet. And we are just, you know, poor old William Troost-Ekong. It feels like he's got the whatever the centre-back version of the yips is, because he just looks like he's lost it completely. The ball could come to him in a non-threatening situation. No one bearing down on him. And he's just looking to head the ball to a colleague, and he's almost fluffing that. He's under-hitting it, or it's coming off the top of his head instead of the forehead. And the alarm bells in terms of the defence
have been ringing for a very long time.
Yeah, and we do have to caveat it with the fact that we were playing Manchester City and we could play at the top of our game and they'd still beat us 3-4-5 goals to nil or to one, whatever. So, but you know, this has been happening, and that we're now at, it feels like we're at a crossroads, really, for me, because we're going into games effectively a goal down. And, you know, we're going into games knowing that we need to score at least one to get a point, and 2, 3 or 4 to win it. And it's totally unsustainable.
I mean, it is unsustainable where we are at the moment. But you say crossroads, and the crossroads I have in my head is the fact that we do have players to come back. My problem with the defence and the centre pairing, more than anything, is the fact that the pairings aren't really working. There is no leader back there. You've got Craig Cathcart, who you can't knock, who does the right things, who does, of course, make mistakes, as every level centre-back of Watford's squad would naturally do. But there isn't that thing, you know, Nkulu with Troost might actually be better. Nkulu with Cathcart, Nkulu, you know, that sort of seniority and that, you know, someone who's taking control of that back line. That's what we're missing more than anything for me. And it's the combinations that are going to be the really powerful thing. And they weren't great yesterday, but I tell you what was quite good, Jason. Daniel Bartman made some pretty, pretty impressive saves to make it not 10-0.
He did, didn't he? Especially early on, Mike said earlier that, and as did Pep Guardiola, saying that that game could have been done and dusted after 15 minutes. And I think it was mostly down to Daniel Bartman and the saves that he made early on. And then there were, I think, a couple more in the second half where he's done well. Even the second goal, the first save has been good. I think if you're going to put any fault on him, that second goal, after he made the save, perhaps he didn't quite get his bearings right and he was sort of beating his near post. But ultimately, it was a good performance from Daniel Bartman, which is pleasing to see after the rather public announcement that he felt he deserved first team football, because since he'd been back in the team, it hadn't quite looked that he did deserve his place. But last night was much better, and he even took one in the Crown Jewels for us to save the goal. So you can't fault that.
Which is exactly the feeling that you get watching Watford against Man City. So I think it's probably only fair that one of the players feels exactly what it's like as a supporter for the last three, four, five seasons.
Mike, but the one who's getting the most criticism and focus, let's say, is Danny Rose. I look at it in some way with him. I can't put my finger on it. What it is with him. Has he just had two terrible games against the two best teams in the country, in the world maybe, in Liverpool and Manchester City? Is there more to it, or are we looking at him in the wrong way, do you think?
Yeah, it's a really, really difficult one, isn't it? Because on the face of it, he's obviously got Premier League experience, European experience, international experience, and we've seen him play well for Watford. We've seen him done really, really well. And I think your question's a good one, John. I wonder whether there's a little bit of subconscious concern amongst us as supporters, because we know over the last two or three seasons his career's hit a bit of a hump, hasn't it? He's gone off the rails a little bit for a whole host of reasons, and it's difficult to speculate because question marks over whether he actually still wants to be playing football. I think in terms of, you know, he's had a great career, he's obviously financially set up for life. Does he need to be really still pushing himself? And I think that's a question that we think that Danny Rose is potentially grappling with.
Is it that he doesn't want to push himself physically as a footballer? I think he probably still does, but we know everything he's gone through outside of psychologically. You know, he probably hasn't gone through a lot, and there's that's a harder thing that you want to sort of get yourself through. But he is playing, and like I say, I don't think he's terrible, and I can't put my hand in my heart and say who my first choice would be for left back between him and Messina if they were fit.
I think that's the problem, John, isn't it, for us as supporters, because there is no one else. And then when you see a performance, yes, it was against Manchester City, but it just felt lacking in spark and focus. And Jason and you have just spoken about Daniel Backman, and I thought he actually summed up the Watford performance pretty well, in as much as it was wholehearted and committed throughout. I don't think any of them really gave up. I thought they actually gave really, really good accounts of themselves in very difficult circumstances. But the one that you would potentially question is Danny Rose. Now, don't get me wrong, anyone having to play in defence against Manchester City is entitled to feel a little bit sorry for themselves. It is a thankless task for the most part. But as fans, we look at it and we think that's what we've got at left back, really. That's the only specialist left back we've got available to us. And how do we feel about that? And I think when you see him getting given the runaround, like he was on against Manchester City, like he was against Liverpool, when the chips were really down against the high-end operators, he was found wanting pretty completely, wasn't he? And did we get the same level of focus and commitment and sort of just giving everything he'd got to keep the score down or to keep Watford in the game for as long as possible? Not sure.
Yeah, not sure. That's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, ultimately. But I think the whole thing is just that, knowing that we've got no one else, knowing that that we're so threadbare back there, that exacerbates it all. We're coming out of the ground, I'm thinking, well, that's Ngakia in for Brentford, certainly. But is Danny Rose a different footballer against a team like Brentford or Burnley or Crystal Palace at home?
He was at Norwich, wasn't he, Mike?
He was, absolutely.
Norwich was probably one of his best games this season, if not his best. And is he turning into, like you used to describe Gerard Deulofeu sometimes, as a flat track bully? Is that what he is? Is he only going to be able to step up against the sides that we should be beating anyway?
Because I thought he did okay when he came on against Chelsea, in fairness, and that was as part of a better and more offence led performance, of course. But you know, he got thrown on after 12 minutes in difficult circumstances for a whole host of reasons, and I thought, you know, he didn't catch the eye as being the weakest of our weak link, which is the defence, then, did he? So look, we've got to be important, you've got to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but it just feels like there's so many issues at the back there that another one like that is something that we could really, really do without. And, you know, Claudio Ranieri and his staff have really got a job on their hands, and so have Gino and Scott, really, because I think about Claudio Ranieri and I think about what he's delivered in terms of turning round this squad, turning round our belief in this squad and making them fun to watch and enjoyable to watch and competitive. But I do wonder, he must be thinking, gosh, I've got them sort of scoring goals and looking threatening, but what on earth am I supposed to do with what we've got at the back here?
You mentioned there, Mike, Ngakia, you know, should start, yeah, maybe, some say, against Brentford. You know, Jace, is that a straight swap for Rose? Or at least, Kiko would go over to the left if we know he's played there, Ngakia on the right. Do you think that's the best thing to do?
I think so, because our options are pretty limited otherwise, aren't they? I mean, who else would you play there? You wouldn't change the system, would you? I suppose the other thing is, could you go to a flat back three and maybe play wingbacks. I wouldn't change the system at this stage. So I think, yeah, having our two right backs on the field as fullbacks, one on the right, one on the left. And yeah, Ngakoue had a decent run of it when he came on Saturday. You'd probably say, yeah, let's stick Ngakoue there. Let's give him a go at left back. We know that Kiko had a good run at left back under Pearson, but that was a couple of seasons ago, and I doubt that Ranieri and his team have great knowledge of that. They may have been told about it, but they can only trust what they see, and if they liked what Ngakoue did when he came on, they'll probably give it a go in training this week, and we take it from there. Danny, yeah, you'd still have him in the squad, wouldn't you? You'd still have him on the bench, but is this an opportunity to sort of fire a warning shot at him? Transfer window's not far around the corner. Are Gino and the boys going to be looking for another left back? Come on, Danny, sort yourself out. Otherwise, you're not going to get much game time from January onwards.
Well, I think whatever happens, I think I don't know how long exactly Messina's going to be out, but we'll probably need someone else at left back whenever it's possible. The question is who and how much is Gino and Scott prepared to pay in some ways. But I think if anything, Ngakoue needs, because we're so threadbare, a game against Brentford, that's the game to give him a start to get him going and get his heading the better, ready for being a strong option for Claudio. In the midfield, Mike, it's weird because it's so strong, but that's where Claudio makes quite decisive changes, particularly at half-time. Looking at Tom Cleverley, he played the entire game against Manchester United, been taken off at 45 minutes against Leicester and against Manchester City, and didn't play in the Arsenal game. Is that tactical? Do you think it's purely tactical? The fact that he is just the terrier that is Cleverley, that's the thing that he's saying, I just don't need that at the moment, I want to put someone else in. And is it great that he has all these options, Claudio?
Yeah, I think for me the substitutions are proactive, and they tend to be because of the state of the game and having to change things up for whatever reason. Yesterday we were, 2-0 down at half-time, miraculously, and probably just wanted to freshen things up and maybe with one eye on future games even, perhaps. Yesterday, I think that was a big thing for me, was getting all the key components of our side through that game, A, unscathed, B, without picking up a red card or a suspension or anything like that. So I think what we've seen from Ranieri, he is very, very willing to make changes at an early stage, and I like that. I think it's probably been forced on him more often than not, because the games have been pretty manic, haven't they? Really thinking about Leicester and thinking about yesterday, where we could have been really 4 or 5 down before in the blink of an eye. But I like our midfield, John. I think it's good. We spoke about Imran Lusa with Adam and DCW in the week. He continues to show glimpses of being a really, really good footballer, and we're starting to see why the club were willing to pay the money for him, and we're excited to bring him in. I think Moussa Sissoko is going from strength to strength. I'd definitely have him in for a little bit of extra shooting practice, but I think he's proving to be a hugely, hugely important part of that midfield, and he's a captain. He's leading by example. He's all over the pitch, and he's almost the flag bearer for Watford 2.0, if you like, this season. Just his sort of all energy, all action, confident, trying to make things happen. And, Cleverley is the perfect foil for both of them. You know what we get from him. Snapping into tackles, he gets around, gets up and down, speaks to the referee a lot as well, which I think, little things like that sort of, he's not the captain, but he is a sort of captain by default, a vice captain, if you like. Yesterday, in pauses in play, you'd see the City players sidling up to the ref and making sure that he'd heard about this, seen that. Did you notice that? Have you seen it when he did that? So the midfield, I think, is good and is functioning well. I'm really, really fascinated to see what they can do next week against Brentford and Burnley, whether they can impose themselves on those sort of sides, because someone made the point on Twitter to me called Michael, who echoed exactly my question, I suppose, is whether this midfield can match the intensity levels against the teams that are you know, in and around us, that we're not going into these games as such market underdogs. Yes, we're away from home, so I suspect from the bookies' point of view, we will be the underdogs, but we will be fancying ourselves in these games to get something from them. And when you turn up against Man City, when you turn up against Chelsea, when you turn up against Man United, you know when you cross that white line, you have to give it all. And you should, they're the games that excite you as professional footballers, I'm sure. So now they have to replicate that extraordinary levels of commitment and energy and focus and passion, really, in these games that we have to get something out of. So I think the midfield is cause for optimism. There's a really nice balance, I think, between the guile and craft of Imran Lusa and the sort of all action work that you get from Moussa Sissoko and Tom Cleverley. It feels like a nice blend. It feels like we've hit upon a nice little collection in the midfield there. Now it's over to them.
Well, I look at it and I sort of say, nothing solid there. I don't think I've definitely got a starting, you know, three in midfield, or I'm not feeling particularly a one particular setup is the thing that we must have. And that feels quite good. And, you know, it's nice that he has those sort of riches to pick from for Claudio, especially with Kuchka coming back from injuries, to add hopefully a headache for him in terms of selections, or give more options off the bench at least. And Toufan we haven't really seen for a couple of games. Jace, though, the biggest headache, maybe, is it though? Is it the biggest headache for Claudio? Is the attacking front three? We've seen for the last two games a start of João Pedro, King and Dennis. We weren't sure if Dennis would start, if his injury either, you know, had stopped him or maybe will stop him in the coming weeks, but that seems all right so far. But we saw Hernandez come on and score his second goal for Watford this season. Do you think he's shown enough yet to break into the starting 11?
This feels like deja vu. I think it's only a few weeks ago you were saying to me, well, we saw João Pedro come on today. Do you think he's done enough to start? And I went, nah, let's leave him on the bench because he looks like he's a good option.
But we would have done that, wouldn't we? If Saar had not been injured, that's probably where we would have been.
Yeah, and I think at the time I said, let's start Cucho and bring Pedro off the bench. Obviously, Pedro's now worked his way into the first team and done reasonably well. I think perhaps he found it a bit tougher on Saturday evening, but you're still getting honest performances from him. Cucho, he burst onto the scene, didn't he, when he came off the bench and scored that great goal against Villa. I think expectations immediately were raised 300% with that sort of debut. He hasn't quite found his feet since then, but coming on yesterday, which is a very, very difficult thing to do. I mean, when you're coming on, young lad, game, okay, it's only 2-0, but it's against City. We knew which way it was going to go, really. But he didn't let that affect him. He sort of carried on. He took his opportunity, took his chance, and, you know, he kept finding space out wide on the right. He perhaps was a bit unfortunate. There was an opportunity late on where great ball's been pinged across to him. He just didn't quite get the touch right. If he'd got that right, he could have been in on for a second goal. Even the goal itself that he scored obviously didn't let the fact that the first effort didn't go in. He sort of kept his head on, followed up to put the rebound in. So it was perhaps a maturer performance from him when he came on yesterday than we've seen recently. I think that sort of old head on young shoulders cliche klaxon going off there.
I loved his performance. I loved it. The reaction for the goal was extraordinary. That was brilliant. They did pick up on it on I think it was Match of the Day. He could have been forgiven for sort of wheeling away, half celebrating when he looked like he'd slotted it in the corner, but not a bit of it. It was he had to be extraordinarily alert to get to that and put it in. And I think his performance summed up. I mean, you know, we've been quite downbeat perhaps about yesterday, and you know, ultimately we've been beaten again. We've lost three times in a week. We've conceded what, 9 goals in a week. So we don't need to be good turning cartwheels. But I think what Hernandez's performance showed me was that that's someone who's fighting for a place in this squad. This is someone who wants to be a part of it. This is someone who wants the ball, wants to do things for this team in this situation. And I think you're right, Jace. I think he is looking more mature. It's not quite so just head down and run with it and see where we end up. And it's not just shoot from here and hope that's gonna loop in or whatever. I think it was sort of focused commitment. And I really like that, and I think that was what I got from a lot of the Watford players yesterday. They didn't roll over, and what I do like about Cucho is he's not frightened. He never goes missing. He's got that lovely low centre of gravity. He can barrel forward. He looks like he means business. He's obviously got a decent touch. He can obviously finish, and I think the fact that he's starting to slowly but surely flourish a little bit and feel like, I think he's got confidence in what he can provide amongst this sort of lovely group that we've got up front at the moment. And I thought it was a really promising performance up front from him yesterday, and he really, really deserved his goal, and I hope he gets the credit that he deserves for being so switched on for slotting it in. But I also want to mention Joshua King, because I think he continues to look magnificent for me. The work that he does up there is really, really good. Yes, he had that chance to make it 3-2. It was a smart chance and probably went a little bit wider than I thought at the time. And he'll be disappointed that he didn't at least test Edison in goal. But I just think the way he moves, his shape, his strength, he's so, so valuable for us at the moment in terms of what we're creating. Cucho grabbed the headlines yesterday. Pedro, we know what we're going to get from him. He's continuing to be an absolute monster. I think he's brilliant. And Dennis is getting all the headlines and all the admiring glances for obvious reasons. But I think one of the prime reasons they're able to shine is because of the work that Joshua King does. I think he's brilliant for us. And he's so instrumental. We must keep him fit. And I think he deserves a little doff of the cap for the work that he continues to do. He's not getting the goals, but the work he does is instrumental. And he looks every inch the number nine. And I love it. I love watching him play. He's superb.
I think coming back to that Cucho question, and the question was, has he done enough to get into the starting 11? I think the difficulty is, Mike, you're absolutely right. He did look like a player fighting for his place and wanting to be in that starting 11 when he came on. But you alluded to the rest as well. They're all looking like that at the moment, and it's picking the right three. So I guess it comes down to how he wants to play and how he expects the opponents to play, so which front players he goes for.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Now, we were worried at this point of the season, after this nightmare run, that we might need something to pep up the players. So from the Rookery End, we decided to hold a award ceremony. Thanks very much to everyone who came along this week. You know who you were, who drank a bit too much. We won't say on the podcast, but well done. But here are the highlights from the award ceremony that we held earlier this week.
Oh,
Ladies and thank you. Thank you so much for joining us this evening at this special award ceremony that we put on just to, you know, make everyone feel a little bit brighter after the couple of losses Watford have had recently. Because there are things to celebrate, of course. Let's get straight on with the first award. The first award is the annoying, excited kid at Christmas who can't stop playing with his new toy award. And that goes to Ben Foster for all his new creator hobbies. The Marilyn Monroe, if you can't handle me at my worst, you're sure as hell don't deserve me at my best. That award goes to Daniel Barkman for his comments about leaving in January if he doesn't start playing. The Mark Morris, Gavin Marn, Andre Gray Award for Scapegoat of the Season goes to, maybe obviously, William Troost-Ikon. The Purse Award goes to Joshua King for cleaning out that Bournemouth dirt and scoring a hat-trick for the Hornets. The British Rail Award goes to Nicholas Nkulu for finally arriving, even though a little bit late. The IKEA Award for becoming part of the furniture finally goes to Craig Cathcart for somehow still being in the starting 11. The Vivian Westwood Award for costume customisation and flair goes to Kiko Feminia for his socks. Ooh, beautiful stuff. The Will Hughes Blondes Have More Fun Award goes to Cucho for his adventures with peroxide. And the F*** Off They Are Trainers and You Ain't Coming In Here Award goes to Yuri Kuchka for his slightly mad bouncer vibes. And the Sharwood Award goes to Emmanuel Dennis for the quality of his nutmegs this season. And finally, the Christopher Columbus How Did I End Up Here Award goes to Quadgo Bar for somehow leaving Rochdale and ending up in the German under-21s. Thank you so much for coming, ladies and gentlemen. We hope you had a lovely evening and there's so much to celebrate as fans of Watford Football Club. Good night. Yeah, you know, the many deserved winners there, but do you feel like the feeling I'm getting, I should say, from what we've been talking about for this game, that was at the end of a fourth defeat in a row, that actually we've got a lot more awards to give out at some point this season because there is good stuff to come, isn't there?
I think so. Yeah, I do.
Lovely commitment, Mike. I think so. I'm not going to kick myself to positivity. I'm not doing it.
it's such a weird one, isn't it? Because, you know, Ranieri's record at Watford is what? 2 wins, 6 defeats in 8 games. No one's conceded more goals in the Premier League since Claudio Ranieri took over since at that date. So things aren't going our way on paper. So I don't want to let myself get too carried away. But in the same
There's no money on this, Mike. We're not putting any money on them. No one's going to be going after you for a bet.
in the same breath, I've loved this week. Yeah. I had a real laugh at Leicester on Sunday. I thought we were sensational against Chelsea. Disappointed we didn't get the win. And, you know, we came out with our dignity intact against Manchester City and we saw a lot to love from a lot of players against Manchester City and in those games I mentioned. So from an entertaining point of view, they're delivering. From a fun point of view, they're delivering. We're now at the stage in the season where they've got to deliver the results. You know, Claudio Ranieri said it, our season starts now. He's a serious grown-up football manager. And we're starting to look like a serious grown-up football team in parts. So, yes, John, I think you're absolutely right. I think that we are entitled to expect some fun and games and some reasons to be cheerful, some things to celebrate in the coming months. And I think that this group of players, they look committed. They look like they're up for it. They look like they know what their job is and they look like they're going to deliver on it. So I fully expect for us to have another award ceremony in a couple of months' time, and it's one that we should be able to enjoy. I said to someone on a text the other day, I think it was after the Chelsea game, I said something's happening with this team. We've had to wait a little time for it to happen, but it feels like we're on the cusp of something. They've got to go and deliver it now, and not mean that all this optimism in the face of bad results is unfounded. They've got to go and deliver. We can't lose sight of that. Just because we've got through this clutch of 5 games, it doesn't mean we're freewheeling. We have to turn up and perform. But the exciting thing is, we've seen that they can do it. Everyone's conceding goals down at the bottom. We know what the defensive frailties are. It's over to the people who can actually do something about it to either bring in reinforcements or work on how they're going to defend in matches. The rest of it is kind of taking care of itself. So as a supporter, Brentford on Friday, cannot wait. Just bring it on. Let's see what happens next. It's building to hopefully an exciting sort of start of a crescendo, if you can have the start of a crescendo.
Jason, I was reminded today, it's 5 years since a certain 5-0 drubbing of Fulham in West London, of course, after a horrendous run of games under Jokanović, where we were, it was four defeats on the trot, similar to what we've had now, and he came back with a great win, and that was this was the start of our run for promotion. I don't think this is going to be the start of our run for the Championship in the Premier League. Just being clear on that. But do we think the Tinker Man, though, Jason, with this games coming up, which are going to be different from this high level calibre, you know, opposition that we've had, is he going to be tinkering a lot with this squad, or do you think he really knows what he needs to do?
I'm sure he's got a clearer mind of what he wants to do now, and the recent performances will have gone a long way to cementing that. He's not done a massive amount of tinkering, is he? He's again, this weekend it was just the one enforced change, wasn't it, from the previous lineup. But then what he does do is during the games, if he needs to make changes, he makes changes, which is quite refreshing to see. I guess it depends on how the opposition will play against us as well. I don't expect Brentford to sit back against us. If we sort of think back, we've talked about this tough run somewhere in the not too distant past. We had that horror show at home to Southampton where we thought, having seen the result at Everton previously, we thought, okay, we have no problem against Southampton. They blow hot and cold. We're at home. We should be able to handle them. So we can't go into the game at Brentford being all complacent and think we'll be able to sort of steamroll them out of the way. They're a good side. They've got a decent point at Leeds this weekend. Probably unlucky not to get three with that late equaliser they conceded. So they're no fools. They're no mugs. My biggest problem is I can't work out whether I like Thomas Frank or not. it's admirable, the Moneyball thing they do, but he gets a bit excitable like Klopp, and I don't mind Klopp, and I'm not sure whether I mind Frank or not. That's my biggest problem, not whether we're how we're going to get on against Brentford. Anyway, over to you.
Well, I'll tell you who I definitely don't mind, and that's Claudio Ranieri. I think he's doing good things. I think it was a good appointment, and I think a few people said, "Oh, why didn't we get him sooner? Why didn't we get him sooner?" Well, if ifs and buts are sweets and nuts, yada yada yada, it probably, you know, the cards wouldn't have fallen the way they did had we tried to make a change in the summer. We are where we're at. We've got what we've got. We've got the coaching staff we've got, and for me, it feels like it's coming together quite nicely. I think, you know, the Christmas period is frenetic, it's busy, there's lots of games. We can do our part as supporters, I think, as well. Let's try and make sure that we're noisy and supportive, and let's keep this sort of good feeling going. They're dishing up some exciting football. Let's get behind them. Let's enjoy it. Let's enjoy what we're seeing as Watford supporters. We might be in the Premier League for another couple of months. We might be in the Premier League for another couple of years. We might be in the Premier League for another couple of decades. But let's enjoy it for however long it lasts. It's good fun being a Watford fan again, and let's embrace it.
Yeah, we could. It's hard. Statistically, it's hard to say that Ranieri gave us a bounce, but I certainly feel that we're going to be bouncing in the Rookery end in plenty of games to come. Thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael.
You're welcome. Sorry to all the listeners. I've got another bunged up nose, so goodness only knows what I sound like. So sorry to everyone, and thanks for sticking with it this far. Oh, and a big thank you to everyone who mentioned that we were their number one listened to on their Spotify Wrapped to the season. That was really, really nice just to know that people do listen. It's still amazing to me after, what, 10, 11, 12 years of doing this podcast that people listen with such regularity. So thanks to everyone who flagged up, and thanks to everyone for listening. As always, legends.
Yeah, and remember, if you aren't a subscriber to The Athletic, then your current deal is a 33% off. So that's a third if you're a fan of fractions. And you can get that if you go to theathletic.com/rookeryend, where you can read the writings of the entire team, but particularly Adam Leventhal and the coverage of Watford. And of course, we'll be back on Thursday with another podcast with Adam, finding out what he's been writing about and what is going on, all the newsy stuff around Watford FC. But there's a big game on Friday night in West London in a brand spanking shiny new stadium at Watford take on Brentford. We're going to be there, and come on, you Owen!
The Athletic.